Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder, and so that's pretty much what we look at. Today we're going to be talking about an area of self-directed learning and creativity that I think is really important. It's getting kids to fall in love with writing. So we're going to talk about 10 teacher-tested strategies to engage reluctant writers. And I want to start out with a bit of a story. A few years ago, my son opened a Google document and just started typing. I asked him about it, and his eyes lit up as he described the shared story he was writing with his classmates. Now, this was the first day of summer break, but he was choosing to write for fun. Let me say that again. He was choosing to write for fun. Now, that might not sound like much, but it's a tiny example of one of those everyday miracles that happen all the time in classrooms. My son fell in love with writing because of a teacher named Mrs. Rediger. He spent the whole year getting up early. He'd finish his chores as fast as he could, and he'd eat his breakfast so fast I'd have to say, "Bud, come on, slow down a little bit." And he would do that just to be able to hop onto the computer, figuratively, not literally. Obviously, you don't want to break a computer, and start writing a blog post or doing a story on Storybird. I mean, he viewed himself as an author. He viewed language as a playground. And all of this was because of Mrs. Rediger. That was the year when he moved from liking writing to loving writing. But it wasn't just him. I remember visiting his class one day. I was going to volunteer for a field trip, and I watched as a reluctant writer, a group of reluctant writers who hated the subject at the beginning of the year, were now working feverishly on their argumentative essays. Miss Rediger had created a classroom culture built around the idea that writing should be fun, that it wasn't something that you did when you weren't doing something cool. It was something that you did that just was cool. And yet, we've all seen it before. There are those kids who seem to hate writing. You assign a writing prompt and you have a student who just writes two sentences. You have others who are scared to even get started. Others who are convinced that writing is boring and it's like pulling teeth to get them to go. Still others who are struggling and don't know where to start. So how do we engage those reluctant writers? Well, I've been asking some of the best writing teachers I know, and they've been sharing with me some of their favorite teacher-tested strategies. And so I'm taking some of these strategies and adding some of the ones that I experienced both as a middle school teacher and a college professor on my own. And I want to share 10 of those strategies. So here we go. Number one, start with voice and choice. Now, some kids are just not into writing because they're not into the subject. If they lack background knowledge, they can easily grow frustrated and just give up early. But when you allow them to choose their own topics, they begin to write in an area where they are already passionate. This is one of the things I love about Genius Hour projects. And yet, you can't always do a full-scale Genius Hour project. I mean, you do have time limitations, you have subjects, standards that you have to teach and so on and so forth. So what I used to do was thematic blogs. We called them geek out blogs. And these geek out blogs were basically this. The very first thing students would do was choose the topic that they wanted to write in their posts. And this created kind of a thematic blog for them. Some kids did foodie blogs or Minecraft blogs or fashion blogs or you name it. Underwater basket weaving, whatever they're into. And then from that, they would get to choose the format. They would get to choose the individual topics of the post. They would engage in their own research. They would ask their own questions, and they would share their findings in the classmates. And then what they would do is they would write these posts that range from things like listicles to Q&A interviews to articles that resemble something closer to, you know, a newspaper and so on and so forth. And basically they would write as if they were experts, which is honestly what they were. Now with Geek Out Blog, students get to own the entire writing process, from finding the topic, the audience, to researching, writing, editing, publishing, you name it. They got to choose how many posts they wrote or how long their posts were. They got to choose the format and genre of the posts. Some of them were writing more instructional style, and some of them were writing more expository style, and some of them were writing more persuasive style. But the bottom line is they got to choose. So that's number one. You can start out by letting them choose the topics. And the cool part of it is this. If you look at the standards in writing, they are almost entirely content neutral. They're almost entirely topic neutral. So yes, a kid might be writing about skateboarding or might be writing about Fortnite. God forbid, can we be done with that? But I just say that because my own kids are into Fortnite and they just get tired of hearing about it. But anyway, the bottom line is they get to choose the topic, because really what you're assessing are the skills involved in writing, not the content, not the topic. They can choose that. Now, this doesn't guarantee that every kid is going to love writing. I get it. Sometimes it takes a while, especially when kids have a fixed mindset. But this is a great start. Letting them choose the topic and starting out from day one, letting them do a research style thematic blog project. Again, we call them Geek Out Blogs in the very beginning of the year is a great way to begin. And when you do this, what you're saying to your students is, I value what you have to say. I'm interested in your geeky interests. And I got to tell you, some of the coolest things I've ever learned, I learned because kids were geeking out on a subject that I didn't know was that interesting. I don't follow fashion. If you look at me, I clearly don't. In fact, my son pulled me aside the other day and was like, Dad, you can't wear baggy jeans because baggy jeans are the mom jeans of your generation. Baggy jeans are the embarrassment. And I was like, dang, burn, right? That's what happens when you have a kid, you know, who's adolescent. But the bottom line is fashion became fascinating to me when I had a group of students who geeked out on fashion. I learned things I never thought I would have learned before. And that's what happens when they get the chance to geek out. Often they'll take it to a deeper level because they already have that surface level content knowledge. So anyway, that's the first one, to start out with student interests and voice and choice. Number two is to ask them to find an authentic audience. Now, sometimes students are reluctant writers because they see the process as irrelevant. They spend years submitting their work to the teacher and only getting it back weeks later and putting it back into a backpack or a binder, or maybe putting it on the refrigerator if it's really nice. It gets published to one person, or maybe to an audience of the kitchen if it's lucky enough to go on the fridge. But one of the things I really believe is that they ought to be sending their work at some point to an authentic audience. Now, when I co-created Write About, it's a student blogging platform with my friend Brad Wilson, we were forming this together. We really built it on this idea of having them send it to an authentic audience. So we created these like interest-oriented user groups. So you had sports groups and fashion groups and animal groups and this and that, and they would publish to those groups of fellow students all over the world who shared those interests. And to me, that's what it's all about. It's getting them to share it with an authentic audience. Now, years ago, when I created a class online magazine, I was having students publish to this thing that we called Social Voice Magazine. That was the name of it. And he pointed out that some of my students didn't have any work in the magazine, on the blog. And I told him that some of them didn't want to share it online. Some of them didn't think their work was worth sharing, and they were scared, and so they didn't want to do that. And his answer was pretty blunt. He said, then you'll have to prove them wrong. Dang, Javi was right. Every student should share their writing with an authentic audience at some point. Now, it doesn't have to be every single piece every single time, but it should happen at some point. So the goal is to get them to publish their work at some point. I want to share a story about this. I had this one boy who really struggled with writing. He was mostly nonverbal, and it took him a full class period to type a single paragraph. Few of the students in our photojournalism class interacted with him very much, and the only time that they really talked to him was during our cooperative learning activities we would do inside of class, but they never talked to him before class or after class, and he always just looked kind of lonely. Well, one day, he pressed publish instead of clicking the save as draft button, and my heart sank, because minutes later, I noticed that his unedited work was right there in our classroom stream and that 10 students had commented on it. I panicked. I wasn't sure what to do because, you know, kids can sometimes be brutal to each other. And eighth graders can be especially brutal. And I was worried about online bullying. But that's not what happened. The comments were affirmative and kind. They asked clarifying questions and started a conversation right there in the comment section of his blog. And suddenly he had an audience. Over the next few weeks, he wrote more and more and shared things that others had never even noticed, like the patterns he saw in video games and the obscure cheat codes that he knew about. He began to share his photography, and his classmates were blown away at the beauty he was able to capture. To me, that's the power of sharing with an authentic audience. Reluctant writers are often convinced that what they have isn't worth sharing. But when they share it with an affirmative audience, and I think that piece is important, that it's affirmative, a group of people who will listen to them and affirm them, then they can speak truth when the writers themselves can't believe it. They become the people who lift them up and help them. Number three, though, is kind of the opposite. It's to embrace the vintage. Although there's power in having kids creating blog posts and podcasts and documentaries and stuff like that, this is the idea of having kids keep a private journal. And journals are this space where your thoughts can run wild. If publishing to an authentic audience creates a positive peer pressure, the private journal is a place that is judgment-free. It's fear-free. It's a place where you can sketchnote ideas and draw webs and let your ideas move from place to place. It's a playground for writing. I remember one year when I went fully tech-based, we got rid of our journals, we got rid of sketchnoting, we got rid of everything because I was going to go paperless. I told everyone, I bragged about it online. I was like, I am going paperless this year. But I eventually realized that there were things that were important that couldn't be shared publicly. There was the proximity, the private aspect of writing. And I realized that I missed seeing kids' handwriting. I missed seeing their doodles and sketches in the margins. I missed seeing the stickers that they would put on their journals to make it boldly and affirmatively theirs, right? I missed all of those things. And so I began to incorporate journaling. I did a half-year reset where halfway through the year, I decided we're going to do a reset and part of our writing will involve journals. And kids loved it. I have this prompt that you can check out on this blog post, and it's create a map of your life. And that's an example. I've done this with both middle schoolers and with my college students. And it's a life map project. They sketch out the map in a journal. With my college students, they do a multimedia piece to go with it. And then they tell their story in this private, judgment-free space of their journal. And then if your class community has enough trust and the relationships are strong enough, they can then share their stories with their classmates. Number four is to connect it to their world. Sometimes writers are reluctant because they view writing as irrelevant. For example, if they write an essay describing the causes of World War I, it might seem irrelevant to them. There's no controversy, no conflict, no impact, no connection to their world at all. By contrast, if you ask students, could we have another world war? Or is Europe poised for another world war? Students have to not only know the causes of World War I, but also apply those ideas to the here and now. So one of the things I really think is that there's a value in doing that, in connecting the writing to their world. I think it's also kind of cool when you create student journalism projects. And this is where you're asking them to document reality, to capture it through articles and editorials. Again, there's a video prompt that I created. It's this question of, should college athletes be paid? But, you know, posing editorial questions and then letting them cite evidence, getting them involved in doing research online, and then using that evidence in their editorial posts. So, you know, I obviously taught photojournalism my final 3 years in the classroom, but, you know, starting way back in, you know, my second year of teaching, we always had an online magazine. Again, we called it Social Voice, and our tagline was Our Voice to Our World. But the idea was clear that we wanted students to not only write, but to capture what was going on in their world and to share their voice with the world around them. We often think about the subjects that are, you know, kind of the subjects of the future, STEM and STEAM. And if you change the STEAM around, it can become meats. And if you take the science off, it becomes meat. And a meat lab would be awesome at school. But the idea is, you know, we talk about STEM and STEAM as kind of the future. But I wonder if one of the things that's kind of the future of learning and education and what we want students to be is actually journalism. Digital journalism. It's where they learn how to engage in digital citizenship and digital advocacy. It's where they learn how to decipher what's true and untrue online. It's also where they learn how, you know, media is constructed. And because of that, they have a better sense of how it works. They become better, I would say, more critical consumers of the content online because they have become critical creators as well. So, in my experience, when you tap it into their world and they take on this idea of being citizen journalists, a lot of the reluctant writers actually get fired up to write because they have a reason to write, right? They're tapping into the controversy, they're tapping into the opinions, they're tapping into the events, and they're connecting it to a real world context all around them. Number five is just to make the scaffolding optional. And I saw this with a teacher I worked with, and she was amazing. Her name was Jenny, and she had these anchor charts that kids would flip through, and they would find exactly what they needed in the classroom. They would self-select their tutorials. They would. She had a bank of things like sentence stems and writing starters. And she had hyperlinked vocabulary that they could look at. And all of these scaffolds were available for any student at any time. And if you think about it this way, students won't always have a teacher who's there to help. So by empowering her students to self-select the scaffolding, they were learning this lifelong skill of how to access writing when they're struggling. In the process, what this did for the, you know, reluctant writers is it made them less dependent on her as a teacher. And as a result, they grew more and more confident. And as they grew more confident, they grew more passionate and excited. And they were no longer reluctant learners and reluctant writers. All right, so number six is a pretty simple idea. It's just to write more often. This sounds simple, but think about it this way. If you are struggling as a runner and you are a reluctant runner and you are convinced that you hate running, the best way to get better at it is to simply run, to spend time running, and just to write more often. Now, we talk about reading endurance and having kids do, you know, silent reading. We talk about computational fluency and having kids do math practice, but they need to develop writing endurance as well. A lot of reluctant writers will give up fast because they just don't have the habit of writing for a longer period of time. And so I think it helps to have both extensive multi-day writing, but then also to have a daily time of 15, 20 minutes where they just write and they spend the entire time writing, not editing, not planning, but just writing. And again, I want to share something you might be interested in. I have a resource for this. It's videowritingprompts.com. You play the prompt at the beginning of the class and you just have every student write for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And some of them are going to write a paragraph and some of them are going to write three paragraphs. But the goal is to just make sure every student is writing. Because when you write more, you become a better writer. Number seven is to make it fun. Again, I go back to Miss Rediger. She made writing fun. It was never a chore for my son, but it was never a chore for any of the students in her class. Back when I taught middle school, I made it a daily goal to get all of the kids to just fall in love with writing. I made it a goal, I still have this as a goal as a college professor, that when I have my pre-service teachers blog, I want to see them continue blogging when the class is over. And when I see them finding their voice and blogging and continuing to blog even when the class is done, then I know that it's been a success. So again, that's number seven. Just make it fun. Number eight is to integrate writing into larger projects. I remember meeting with a PLC and we had this special ed teacher, Crystal. She was phenomenal as a teacher. And we were talking about what kinds of projects to do. And she said, we were planning for our writing. And she said, what if we did a maker project? And I wasn't so sure about this because to me, you know, I wanted to have kids, you know, spending time writing. I just said that writing every day was a big deal. But because we were teaching functional text and because we were teaching students how to write instructions, she had a point. What if they designed something on their own and did a maker project? And then from there, they wrote the directions on how to use whatever it is that they were describing. Now, that started as something small, right? Just this mini project. But what we ended up doing was this larger Shark Tank style project where students worked through the design thinking process. They did research, ideation, building, and ultimately creating a plan, a website that explained how their product worked, but also some persuasive pieces explaining why people should use their product. I even taught them a lesson on copywriting and what that looks like. And this was a big aha moment for me. It was this realization that if we want to inspire reluctant writers, we should integrate writing into our projects, not as something extra that they have to do, but as an integrated part of what makes the project authentic. So again, that's number eight, to integrate writing into the larger projects. Number nine is to teach students strategies for getting unstuck. There's a lot of different cool strategies out there, but this is the idea of having specific strategies for when students are hitting a place of writer's block. Because sometimes students are reluctant writers because they just feel stuck. And they might not be your permanently reluctant writer, but they're the type of student who is in the moment just not going to do any writing. So it's the idea of using strategies and teaching them strategies so they can get themselves unstuck when they're feeling stuck. And then number 10 is to just share your writing journey. Students will be more likely to fall in love with writing when they are part of a culture where people love to write. Now, this begins with you as a teacher when you share your passion, your stories, your examples, your struggles with writing. Students realize that writing is a lifelong skill. We often talk about the use of mentor texts in writing, and those can be great. But there's also a value in having a real-life mentor in the classroom, inspiring students to view themselves as writers and authors. And that's what you get to be. So I would say this, sharing your writing journey with your class is a powerful way to get them excited about writing. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.